Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast. I'm your host and GM Alex Newell, and with me today I have
James Ross,
Bryn Monroe,
Lydia Nicholas,
Ben Meredith.
And we are continuing in our mailbag episode. We are answering the questions that people have been sending us. If you have asked a question and we are not answering it here, it's probably because your question is very, very similar to someone else's, and we'll just have to pick one person.
Good enough.
That's not true. That's not true. Mainly because almost all of the questions were about Brutor, and there's only so many ways you can ask a question, which is, oh my god, how excellent is Brutor? So, like, we had to narrow them down a bit.
You're welcome, listeners. You are welcome.
Now that we've recorded the episode as well, we'll resume answering questions on our forum properly when you ask them. We'll totally get to that in the episode, dedicated to this thing, several months from now.
So, the question is, are you thinking of voicing an NPC campaign with just yourself? With the doomed train driver, Commander Barnes, the jailer and Grag, and maybe the dog that wasn't Brutor.
They also ran.
Now, as a spin-off, that would be excellent. As a spin-off where I would have to voice every single character, I would go quietly insane and then loudly insane and then it would stop.
I definitely think that the train driver of Doom should be a backup character for one of us.
I guarantee that those NPCs, if not all of them, most of them will at some point turn up again.
Also, call back to the last mailbag episode. Now you mentioned it, Commander Barnes would be actually quite an interesting person to spend an evening with.
Oh, yeah.
Nah.
Navy, nah. Lots of stories. Seemed like a genuinely nice guy.
Nah.
Has brandy.
He was mean to Harrod.
Ah, well, that may not necessarily be a negative.
Oh! I see you've gone from treating the birds to handing them out.
Well, I did actually pick up inflict moderate wounds, so.
So, is there a part of you that wishes that Brutor hadn't come back? When it seemed like Brutor had died, I think you were quite worried about losing people, and although I'm not suggesting that you would have nudged the dice in a favourable direction, were you relieved that he could run off into a new life?
He lives on a farm now.
He lives on two farms.
In a papoose farm. In a papoose farm.
Where the papooses run free.
So
flopping all over the meadow.
He nearly died twice, of course. Yeah,
so. I genuinely didn't fluff it. I genuinely did not fluff the dice, and when he was one hit point away from dying, I was fine with either way that panned out. Because, honestly, one, am I resenting the fact that Brutor's getting a lot of attention? No, not at all. A character's getting attention.
Yay.
Great. Yeah. This is good. He's also another great example of what I was talking about earlier about holding up a mirror. He was a guard dog that Bertie arbitrarily decided to tame, and then when he started training him, I was like, yeah, okay, if you're going to start turning him into people.
He was also the worst guard dog ever. Remember, yes. He made like four dice rolls as a guard dog and got like less than five.
Absolutely. And then when you start training him in the things that you decide to prioritize, yes, of course you end up with a snobbish dog.
Yes.
And so
this, Brutal, this is the top of the wine list.
And this is the bottom of the wine list.
We don't like that top at all, do
no.
we?
No, no, no. Let's fold it. There we go. Which would you like?
So,
an excellent choice, sir. Flashback to a happier time. Okay, carry on.
So I was fine with Brutor basically heading off into a new happy life. What I would say is the only time I have any issues is if something is if the rule of fun is broken. So an example of that would be that there's no closure, there's no ending to a story. A character mid-conversation walks off and it isn't leading to a mystery. It's just them walking off. Like,
that's just bad manners.
But all I'm getting at, though, is that with Brutal, the only way I would have been upset is if there hadn't have been any ending at all. Or, like, if he was
so
still
this,
here, that
well,
would be fine.
This question would have been asked at the point where Brutal almost died from being thrown off a roof. Was revived and then ran off.
Yeah, good point.
And remember, since this question was asked, we've heard Brutal get brought back by the evil malevolent AI.
Yep.
Had his memories changed
by
the evil malevolent AI / Bertie. And then had the memory change erased so that he remembers everything that was done to him. And basically single-mindedly attempt to kill Bertie.
Oh, yeah.
I do think that's a level of awareness. For a dog to be philosophically affronted by having its memory changed.
I have a simple answer for this. What's your handle animal skill, Bertie?
Very high.
Yeah.
9. Oh, wow. So I've got...
you accidentally made your dog sentient.
Oh, God, I taught Brutal ethical reasoning.
And superior ethical reasoning to yourself, apparently.
Yeah, my handle animal is so good, it's equivalent to a 3-year undergraduate degree at the University of Sussex. That is... Whoa!
Turns out, rather than keeping Bertie away from Mr. Ceiling, you should have just let him handle animal it. And that would have solved all your problems.
I made the mistake of thinking because it can talk back.
In terms of the rules, it's very specifically mundane animals. It doesn't work on, say... unicorns or pegasi.
Oh, interesting.
Or, but Bertie doesn't know that.
Rather magical beasts.
I got gored. How did that happen?
It would not work on cockatrice.
The pointy horse or was basilisks. Not happy. I've never seen this before.
A manticore.
Manticores wouldn't work on them.
Another question. Are your characters being received the way that you wanted or imagined they might be?
I think
that James has said that he wanted Bertie to be thoroughly unlikable.
Yes.
But the more Bertie he is, the more we seem to fall in love
with
him.
That's your problem. What is wrong with you? He's a monster.
How have you evolved their personalities from creation until now? This is definitely a question for other people.
So should we start? Bertie, how have you changed Bertie in response to... Have you changed Bertie? Have you made him more monstrous?
Well, he was... supposed to be sort of, bluff but heroic to start with. That was his outward face. But as we now know, because of developments, blah, 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 that's largely contractual. And he's just horrible. Like, people like Boris Johnson, like LOL Boris. Bertie is LOL Boris in a suit of armour, but, like, without the touch for the concerns of the working man. He's an awful, awful person. And the more unpleasant that I can make him, I'm going to make him more unpleasant. I'm going to make him more unpleasant.
Until people hate him.
Until people
have
hate
you,
him.
Do you remember the initial pitch you had for Bertie?
Yeah, no learning, no hugging, no crying, no growth or something like that.
That was it. You're hitting the nail on the head there.
Yeah. Like.
Although you are growing worse.
Yes. Yeah. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. That's the same but more. But, if Bertie changes...
Flanderization. www.tvtropes.org/flanderization.
It's a homework for you.
Yeah, okay.
It's about how characters become more extreme versions of themselves over time.
Yeah.
Okay, how about you?
More or less, yeah. So I wanted Hammond to be likeable and charming, and I struggled to play charming rather than sort of awkwardly endearing. I would genuinely like Hammond to be much more suave, but even in a role-playing game, I can't really do suave.
Well, it's always part of the thing, is like, how do you play an intelligence greater than yourself, and how do you play...
Well, that's never been a challenge, Alex.
Of course it's been a challenge. There is no intelligence greater than yourself, Brent, obviously. But all I mean, though, is that, like, it's a thing I've come into a lot, which is where people play a very high charisma character, and then they're like, I'm physically not capable of this, and that's where the suspension of disbelief comes in. That's where...
I feel like Hammond's been okay, and Hammond has come across as high charisma, but I wanted him to be high charisma in a different way than he was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wanted him to be quite smooth and slick and suave, and I just couldn't really do that. But...
More James Bond, less Alan Bennett.
Yes,
and also, he's been... I think that you played his reaction to trauma quite.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I think he was quite slick at the very beginning, but then almost immediately he was in a burning, collapsing building.
Yeah.
And
so this was Hamid being like, I've just come out of a casino, I'm going to become an adventurer. Oh no!
Peril!
We saw a lot of people die.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Was quite a lot.
And yeah, actually, and like playing that as someone who was not ready for or expecting it was really fun. I mean, he's also incredibly privileged.
And needs to start checking that at some point.
And doesn't yet. And but that's intentional. That's a choice I've made for the character, you know, that he is blind to his own privilege, that he is occasionally a bit hypocritical. He's not the hero he wants or pretends to be, but I'm hoping he becomes that in the long term. Sort of the arc I've envisaged for the character. You know, you said, are we jealous of the attention Brutal gets? Yes, absolutely. I absolutely wanted Hamid to be the small, or adorable, lovable one in the group. And I was usurped by a dog.
The dog's gone now. This is the same reason why...
That's why he gave him away!
Yeah.
Same reason what? Machiavellian and cold, Hamid. Wow. Cold.
I think it's quite interesting, though, that both Bertie and Hamid have come from positions of privilege, and you've both chosen to pretty much do the opposite arcs.
Bertie was always on the cards as the obnoxious one, let's put it that way. And Hamid was always on the cards initially as the most sort of traditionally heroic one. But it's become readily apparent as time's gone on that people are siding a lot with Bertie, even though he's atrocious, because he's just kind of out and out atrocious. And in fiction, that's very different from real life. And that's a quality that's something people can tie to.
You say that, but people are supporting Trump right now. So
I think Trump has been listening to our podcast and has based himself on Bertie.
I mean, fart jokes aside, I think genuinely Bertie is exactly the kind of personality that if put in the same position would do the same thing.
But the things that throw me with Hamid is the mirror side of that, which is people initially signing with Hamid going, oh, he's nice, sweet, and he wants to do heroic things, and slowly losing faith in Hamid as he keeps, like you were saying, having these issues where he's not aware and checking his privilege yet.
I said it in the last episode that I wanted Hamid to be naive, to start off naive, and to have a lot of room to grow as a character. And everything about Hamid is what he might become. He is potential. You know, he's got a backstory like the other characters have, but it's all about where does he go, where is he heading, and what does he become? If he turns into a super powerful dragon and still hasn't learned to check his privilege, does he end up becoming a meritocrat? I mean, he could become, you know, he could become the ultimate example of privilege in this game world.
I am the meritocrat. What are you responsible for? Oh, you know,
fashion.
Oh, am I meeting to the fashion?
Oh, you know
police.
What? That's so much better than what I was going to go with. And what about the rest of you?
People seem to quite like Sasha.
Sasha's been a bit of a hit, actually.
Because she's great.
So she's pretty much amoral, is the thing. Mm. There's a loyalty thing. Yeah, but she has not hesitated to stab people in the back.
Steal.
Well, so there's things about having been forced to do things, but also they're just, I don't know. The thing that hurts her most is betrayal. I suppose more obviously than Hamid, she has extraordinary vulnerabilities.
I think you hit the nail on the head with amoral. Amoral's not the same as immoral.
Yeah.
And that's very, very different. Immoral is, you know, I don't care.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Sasha, you've deliberately put in a situation where huge tracts of, certainly on the morality side, are just not really had chance to develop or be engaged with the nuance to be found yet, and that's the key.
Or you can even talk about it's quite easy to be against stealing if you have stuff.
And
whereas if you're someone like her that has grown up in a very difficult way and then been kind of given the option to take shiny things or been told to take shiny things, well, that's not actually the same kind of moral choice.
It's like,
I have stuff and I want more stuff. As well, she's been having a lot of backstory stuff come up first, whereas we haven't heard about how Bertie developed the outer crust of complete rigidity because he was sent away to boarding school at 4 years old and never got any direct loving attention from his parents. Yeah, or anything like that. We haven't heard that, which might put the character in a different mindset.
And you never will. Feelings are weakness.
The thing is, maybe that isn't his backstory. Maybe he had an absolutely lovely childhood.
You're just a bad child. He's just awful. Very loving parents. Yeah,
his parents are just really disappointed. Yeah. He's like, why are you so horrible? We tried our best.
They're amazingly philanthropic.
Yeah.
They're actually both social workers.
By choice, not by necessity.
No.
By
That's why the MacGuffins are in such debt. They just gave all their money away. And Bertie's like, well, this is wrong.
Where's my horse? Well, yeah.
These people. Where's my inheritance? Yeah. You gave it away.
Yeah.
That's why I hate poor people. They give me my money.
Yeah.
Ironically.
Yeah. Finally, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah. As to reception, I don't really know. I've been a bit of a...
Even keel?
Yeah. I've been playing stuff close to my chest, and which is good, because usually in roleplay I'm quite a limelighter, and I've been trying to make the effort to not do that. So I'm glad, to be honest, that there's not much talk about him.
Zolf's actually been the one who has played out as I expected.
Sound unpredictable, fine, whatever.
Virtue of consistency.
Yeah.
But all I mean, though, is that Zolf has a very clear role, and what has kept coming up is not through, like, manufacture. That role has been reinforced again and again and again and again. Like, any time that there's been bickering, the leader card has been played. Any time that there's, like, been people panicking and fretting, it's tended to be Zolf who's gone, no, that's a terrible idea,
well, there's also
do this thing.
Age thing, as we just were discussing. You know, he's so much older than the rest of us, both literally and in terms of life experience that, you know, Zolf's always naturally going to fall into that role.
So James and Bryn have played their characters as high charisma in very different ways.
Yes.
Like shouty versus kind of smooth and adorable. Whereas both Ben and my characters have minus one charisma, but they're very different.
Yes.
And yeah, I've kind of liked that. Although the one thing as a listener that's frustrating is that one of, like, Sasha's low charisma is often like, she says the wrong thing at the wrong time. She can often reveal more than she really wants to, whatever. Whereas like Zolf's low charisma is like gruff. Blank. Wow, yeah. That's what we don't know. Sasha's asked quite a lot about it.
Yeah, yeah.
In part, being low charisma, sprawling out of it, like not.
So you seem really touchy about this thing. Let's dive into that in extensive depth, whether you want to or not.
What is it like having friends? Don't really understand this. So I think I should express care by expressing interest in what you're doing.
Yeah.
So your eyes are shriveling up. What's that about? That frowning thing. You know. So it does mean that like one might be more accessible to an audience, whereas one is more like over time. You sort of reveal these gradual things. Like, it was awesome finding out that you were arrested for AWOL stuff. It was cool. That was a surprise. Like, if it had been Sasha's issue, she would have been like, so, I got certain... Don't really want to talk about it, but I'm going to.
In extensive detail.
Like that time that I went AWOL, I'm really ashamed about it and I'm really scared. Let's stab a thing to get these feelings out.
Well, I'll say Sasha, stab the feelings away.
Whereas Zolf's one is just like, not going to bring this up. So many layers of, like, stony...
I'll answer with monosyllables. Yeah. Yes,
wait,
that thing happened.
Are like an onion.
An onion made of stone.
You take away a layer, they'll make you cry.
And if you chop them up and put them in a pasta, they make a very good base.
So, yeah, there we go. A nice rounded question answer. Mm. So, the next question is from Glenatron. How much of what you know about your characters has yet to come up in play? Are you discovering them as you go along?
I'll go first with that. There's quite a lot left. I wrote a reasonable amount into his backstory to give him some motivation. There's stuff to come up.
Mm-hmm. Quite a lot of Sasha's backstory has come up, but also there is stuff that Alex knows about my character that I don't, because quite a lot of, like all of this, I think we wrote open questions into them.
That's a good point, actually. It's like the if you cast your mind back to the ring that I have, I don't know why that's significant. I know why it's significant to Zolf, but I don't know what the heck's going on with it being Rakefine's signet ring.
For all of you, there are huge chunks of your backstories that, quite frankly, you don't know. And another thing that I do, and I recommend to every GM out there as the best thing ever, any time a player character makes an offhand comment about their past, you write that down. You write that down right there, right then. You put it in a book, and then you leave it. You leave it for 10 sessions. You leave it for 40 sessions. And then you go through your book of potential things I can exploit. And it's like, oh, you made an offhand comment about that time that you accidentally stole from an orphan. That orphan now runs the city. They are a mayor, and they don't like you. That's really, like, the key. When it comes to this
would be way less disturbing if you didn't also do it in real life. Actual friendships.
It's like the perpetual backstory machine, and you can just, because player characters won't stop talking, and if they're really getting in character, they won't stop dropping those backstory hints, and you can just You can just harvest that for content for the rest of as long as you need.
So we're going to hear about all of the horses that you've mentioned.
Mr. Horse?
Yes. Yes, you are.
Monsieur Chevaux.
Wait, Monsieur Chevaux is now the mayor of Paris.
No!
You left me, Bertie. I had to gain sentience on my own without your handle animal.
I appointed you, sir, mayor of Paris, and I can de-appoint you just as quickly. Handle animal means that I have a great grasp of equine bureaucracy.
So, returning to the original question.
To answer the question in respect to Hamid. So, yes, there is stuff I know about Hamid that we don't, that the listening audience does not yet. But it's not, there's not a lot of stuff. In terms of discovering him through play, absolutely. Like I said, my original intention was to have him come across very differently, and it just didn't work, and so I went with what I had, and like his reactions to things that happened like have surprised me at times, and that's been really fun to play and just sort of and there's some moments I'd love to talk about which I can't because they interact with the secret things that
correct.
We haven't discovered yet.
Correct.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's worth mentioning as well that what the audience doesn't know, we don't know either. We haven't been telling each other our backstories and stuff.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, is it's a completely transparent podcast, so there is nothing that the team know, that the audience, that we are deliberately keeping from them in any way. In fact, there was a big discussion to do with Hamid turning into a dragon, which was exactly tied to this, was, is this a thing that we should keep from the audience?
Yes.
Should the party know? Should the audience know? Should it be a complete mystery?
Yeah.
And that was a big discussion before we even began the campaign. And yeah, we came down, like you said, on the idea that have the audience know everything that the party know.
And also have the reactions be genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. So with Hamid, we've got both directions. So Hamid knows stuff that the audience doesn't about his past, and we know stuff that Hamid doesn't about his future.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
About the dragon thing. Quite nice. So that's, you know, we've got both things going on there.
There was one bit that I loved, which won't have come across in the audio or anything like that, was when Lydia returned from her international travels with an entire plot quest having happened and her having no idea what had actually come up at the same time that her character had no idea of what Bertie had been doing. That was a moment that like audience won't really get, but for me was lovely. It was just a moment of, I did this massive thing, and you're like, what? What? I kind of thought you'd have run off and, you know, like met a horse and that was it. No, I met a horse and then we did things.
Monsieur Chevaux.
Candlelit dinners. So, Bertie, obviously the contract is a very large part of who the character is, but I think very little of the rest of his backstory has kind of come up.
Yeah, I mean, again, from the GM's perspective, what you do is you give all your people to give you as much backstory as they can, and then you use that as a seed to grow a backstory for them. You don't just take what they have and that is all you can work with. Every single thing that is in that backstory should have a ramification, a positive one, a negative one, or a neutral one. And I find it, if every single thing has a ramification, it's kind of more satisfying, because what was written as an arbitrary line can have massive consequences. And
God, I need to go and reread my backstory and see what Alex is going to make use of.
What I would say is, for season 2, all of you should go back and reread your backstories. And if you want to make any revisions, there's still time, but there will be huge ramifications for all of you. So,
he's a monster, but I respect his craft. Yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question?
The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So, continuing on, we're going to blast through these. We're going to make sure that we finish all of the questions. How difficult is it to play this campaign for a podcast? Is there any compromise made by doing it in this format?
Less swearing.
Yeah, no swearing. And stuff about romance or awkwardness or ethical things we want to work through, we think about a lot more.
I think you're all very much more aware of basically what you're saying, for obvious reasons. Like, this is a platform, and as a platform, you will have a responsibility to monitor yourself. But I think that you can't really turn that bit off. I think that changes play quite a lot.
I would say there's one really positive impact, which is there's less spitballing. Like, a lot of games I've played, you get bogged down in planning kind of what, how you're going to approach the next combat, and you sort of spend ages just discussing and building plans, and it's not fun, and it's not good. It's certainly not going to be entertaining, so we don't let ourselves do that. We just cut it out. And it goes right down to the kind of the combat turn level. Yeah. It's like, you know, and we do this a bit, but it's much worse in a normal game. When your turn comes around in combat, in a normal game, it's so common to go like, well, here's the four options. What are the exact details and rules for each of these?
So boring!
Well, it's boring to do, let alone...
I like the numbers. Yeah. I'm not going to apologise for liking
that's
the numbers.
That's fine. That's fine, Brendan. We've all come to accept that about you, and that's great. That's one of your many fine qualities. but I'm, you know, there's just a bit in my head, which is quite helpful with particularly playing the character that I'm playing, of like, okay, bored now, I'm just going to knock this vase off the mantelpiece. Fine! Done. Yeah, which is quite helpful for...
And like a surly cat, make eye contact with you while
you're doing it.
I don't think we're perfect at avoiding that nonetheless. Yeah. Oh, I think it's still a problem that we face, but I think the podcast element of the game helps us avoid it to a degree.
I think also, because you hear the edited version, we're not as snappy in combat. There is a lot of us still going like, oh, what's the best option to do? Because it's still difficult.
And also, James steals all of my jokes.
It's true,
all
he does.
Originally
he does is steal everyone else's jokes. He's got nothing.
It was the classic, you know, woman's in a room thing. You say something first, and then a man
that's
repeats
the
it.
And then everyone laughs.
Man repeats it louder.
That's a really good example, because James steals Lydia's jokes all the time.
Always. He does it constantly. He's doing it right now.
Yeah. You're going to wake up dead. It's not
I'm actually the funny one, honestly.
the other thing I find a real challenge, and I'm sure we don't do this very well, is we're supposed to avoid talking over each other.
Oh, we're terrible at that.
Yeah, it's very different to a normal game.
Yeah. But it's just the kind of thing, like, if it will be written in the script, then you can interrupt.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, I'm terrible for it. I just did it twice. I just talked over the end of your
sentence,
James.
Well.
The end of your sentence, Brent.
Doing it now. Yeah,
right now.
Absolutely.
Here's one other thing, though. All of that's from the player side. I would say, from the GMing side, it is a completely different beast.
Oh, I'm sure.
It is absolutely different. In fact, I'm going to ask you, Bryn, as the only other person at the table
now,
how did you find it, swapping to GMing on podcast rather than GMing normally?
It was really hard. So I think Alex manages it brilliantly, and I really struggled when I was GMing. Is the pacing it for an episode? Mm. Like, having a beat at about the halfway point for an ad break, having a good way to end an episode at an appropriate moment at about the right time. I mean, it's something I've always struggled with as a GM, is like the timing and pacing anyway, but the podcast amplified that hugely, and I found that really hard. And the fact that Alex is so good at it, seemingly effortlessly, is really impressive, and you should all be really impressed by what he does.
I have to admit, when I set this up, I massively underestimated how hard the GMing side is.
Yeah.
And that's not saying that I do a good job irrespective of the thing. It's just that keeping track of all of the equipment and keeping track of pacing and keeping track of all of the story side in such a way that, like you say, it plays out on the beats. For anyone who is intending to record your games, I genuinely encourage you to. There's something really, really great about having a recording of you having a great time with your friends and then being able to return to that months, years down the line and listening to
yourself. I've loved listening to it.
Yeah,
and that's actually another way it's different to a normal game, is you can remind yourself of stuff that happened.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But what I would say is what you would get in that, unless you would put the work in, is not what we're making. Because we're giving you a very heavily edited, sort of targeted, cleaned up thing. Like, we all have the intent of making a product, whereas if you're just recording yourself, be prepared for, oh God, we spent 2 hours discussing how rope works. And that's fine when it's for yourself, and I genuinely encourage you. There's something really fun about it, but at the other end, do not underestimate if you're wanting to set up something similar to this. It's so much more work than you think.
It's also really tiring.
It's exhausting. At the end of one of these sessions, I can barely speak. I genuinely crash after a session and just sleep till the next day.
Well, same for us. I mean,
I'm going to run a comedy night later.
I at least have to, like, we have occasionally tried to hang out immediately after the sessions. And remember that we record several in a row. So we tried to hang out and literally just sat staring at each other silently over a pint. Yeah. two pints. We weren't sharing the pint.
Just two really long straws. Yeah.
Oh, two pints. Yeah, both sharing a pint, both staring at each other. And then but you lift them and then your arms link and you do that thing where
but with beer all over your face.
Straight down your chin, you realise you haven't taken your mic off.
And you're sitting there with your pint, another straw just kind of sliding out of frame, and it's James just putting straws upon straws upon straws two tables over. But then you give him some Scooby snacks and he goes away. It's fine.
Yeah. A very quick thing to remember as well is that three of us spent years, literally, doing improv together.
I'm new.
So are used to having fun together on stage in a structured way that is also fun for the audience.
Yes.
Everyone at this table has some combination of, again, crewing with LARPs, improv experience, stage performing experience, and all of that jazz, which you can bring in to bear, which helps a lot. And I think you would have a very different product if you're with a bunch of people who are playing it. Because again, ultimately, we're playing a game for the enjoyment of others as the primary goal.
Speak for yourself. I love it.
Yeah, but I'm enjoying it too.
I'm having fun right now talking about myself.
I mean, if I didn't enjoy it,
my friends,
I would probably stop because I've got other things going on. Like, I've got a lot to
We've
do.
We've got busy lives. Yeah.
Alex stands, removes mic, walks out into the sunset, never sees anyone again.
We like you, Alex. Is it not... You just
I'm
work
a monster.
To you.
We've established.
But we respect his craft.
So, if the characters had to do a body swap with one another, who would they want to become? And what would they do for the 24 hours? So if your characters were to swap with each other, what would your character want to do for that time and who would it be with?
Sasha would body swap with Hamid and use the disguise and the small body stuff and remember, assuming that she remembers the physical skill of being able to sneak, would just nick everything. Like, everything would be gone. You sort of look down, everyone would look down and everything they owned would be gone. The room would be empty. They'd look outside into the street and there'd be sort of baffled people walking like behind horses because the cart is gone. Like, and the window frame as well, that just vanished. Just combine it all, yeah.
I would be Bertie and do as much good as I possibly can solely to annoy him.
Whereas Bertie would be Zolf and interfere with as many livestock as possible in full public view in order to annoy him.
You'd have to do it very slowly.
some livestock are very slow moving. That won't be a problem.
So Hamid would be incredibly upset. Because he's incredibly vain.
He's so vain.
We haven't talked about this in terms of how he's perceived and his, you know, backstory. And this was not really an intentional choice. It just kind of came up during play that, yeah, Hamid's really, really vain. Which, again, is, yeah, something I discovered by playing
I just love the idea
here.
Of any other of the characters with Hamid inside them just looking down going, I have nothing to work with here. Yeah. What can I possibly do with this? And press the digit. No!
Yeah.
No!
Yeah. Hamid would be super upset, firstly. I think the one thing he could possibly put up with is to inhabit Sasha's body for a day and spend the entire day paying for people to make her more beautiful. Like, just go for a full-on spa treatment makeover day.
So just try
in
out,
Sasha's body.
Try out stuff that he would like to do, but as a lady.
Yeah, essentially. But also, he's like, but Sasha, you could be really pretty. Because
that's
so think that was a nice thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In a body swap scenario,
yeah.
Like, he'd genuinely be super, super upset to end up as Zolf because he just wouldn't want to look like that. Speak
for yourself.
Well, I know it sounds awful, but yeah.
Hot slab of dwarf. Thank you very much.
This is absolutely one of Hamid's major flaws is his vanity. Yeah.
So here's a follow-up question for my enjoyment. If each of you had to be in a character of the four's body for a day, who would it be and what would you do?
Right, so assuming these people are real as well, that character.
No, assuming you jump into this world for a day, which character would you jump into?
Hamid, because he's a rich magician.
Yeah. I think that's quite a simple choice. Yeah. He's the richest and he's got...
Can do magic!
The best magic.
None of us can do magic. Well, I can do magic, but...
It's not so...
No, it's not like...
It's not flashy magic. It's,
also, you have to negotiate with a big beardy bloke who actually exists. Awful.
I wouldn't mind being Sasha for a day, but then I did pick someone that had some extreme...
Very
versions.
Similar to you, anyway.
Yeah. So it wouldn't... if we all just suddenly popped into our bodies... I don't know what would happen to James. He'd be like, I am aristocracy! I don't know what would happen.
Bertie bisects himself.
Yeah, something like that. Ben would probably do pretty well. Just kind of like, I'm fine.
I mean, to be honest, tough, from a body dysmorphism point of view, I'd have no legs.
Yeah.
Mm. Be 4'3".
Yeah.
So kind of a little bit to come to terms with.
It's a little bit to come to terms with.
We'd all cope weirdly with being 3'2" as Hamid.
Yeah, but you'd be a wizard. Yeah. Well, not a wizard, but a magic person. Yeah. You know,
you're a billionaire. Oh,
no. He's definitely a wizard.
Wink. I'd just be like, oh, it's me, but like, you know, with more practical skills and less qualifications.
I'd also take all of Zolf's clothes and put them somewhere safe so that I could pick them up as Ben, because they will make fantastic and probably very expensive LARP costumes.
Okay, the final question is actually a bit of a more mundane one, but a perfectly good question for it. Is the campaign able to be played in different systems, like GURPS or 5th edition or Savage Worlds, or was it strictly designed to work in Pathfinder? So what I would say is, and I will open this to the table in general as well, is that I always find this question interesting, because to me, any RP world that you have, in my experience, can be run on pretty much any system.
Yeah.
The system's kind of your choice. The only exception to that is... if you have a system that is built entirely around the use of guns and cyberpunk internet-based adventures, and you are a fantasy group playing a game against dragons, you're going to have a sparsity of rules to draw upon. That doesn't mean you can't do it. I mean, that's the thing, is that you're going to have a lot of extra books that you can use for inspiration and mechanics, and they're not going
to
be necessarily relevant.
You're going to have
relevant,
to reskin
but,
a lot of things.
Yeah, basically, that's what it comes down to, is there's a lot of reskinning.
It's the idea of, are you using the system or the engine? What is Pathfinder in D&D called? It's the...
D20.
It's like the SRD kind of...
It's the open source D20 SRD.
Yeah, that's it. So it's the same basic DNA. Uh-huh. So if you just took those systems and ran a cyberpunk game, you absolutely could. Yeah. Similarly, with my favourite cyberpunk game, Corporation, it runs for the Brutal Engine, which is roll 2d20 and get under stat plus skill. Really, really good system. And I could easily run a fantasy Corporation game because I know the system enough. I just discard all of the setting things.
Yeah.
So I actually feel very differently. I think that in a good role-playing game, the system and setting intertwine in a very strongly coupled way in order to give the best possible experience. And it's possible, but it doesn't always enhance the game to lift it into a different system, because you're losing some of what made you make the choice originally. Now, I think you could lift this game into other settings that support a lot of the same flavour items, like magic users and warriors in the same sort of way. But I think that, you know, one of my favourite sort of systems, for example, comes from a game called Dogs in the Vineyard, but... it just wouldn't work, because the mechanics in that game are linked to the flavour in that game. Or Apocalypse World, which is another game I love, but the mechanics in that game link to the flavour in that game, and they just don't translate very well. So I think this game would work very well in, say, D&D 5, because D&D 5 and Pathfinder fundamentally run on the same lines. And I think there's other systems like that.
Like Deadlands? Would it work well in Deadlands?
I don't think I know Deadlands well enough. I suspect that the magic system in Deadlands doesn't support the sort of high fantasy level magic of this setting, and I think you would need something that did.
Because that's the thing, is that, so I play most games with people that make up games and make weird games. So I actually have less experience of the mainstream things.
And you're the only person I know who's done more playtesting than they have played established stuff.
Genuinely have, yeah. And definitely there are things in spooky games where risks feel completely different and where pacing of battles feels completely different. Like, because the choices are simpler, you play faster. Or things where, like, you know, we played Goblin Quest. The aesthetic and the mechanic are completely entwined there. Like, the idea that you have five creatures, they're disposable, and he's balanced it so that you really want to get to the last one by the end because you've spent time colouring them in. That is not a mistake.
Yeah.
That makes it easier to dispose of the earlier goblins. I was thinking, like, could you put the party in Goblin Quest and have, like, all of us playing, you know, play all five of the Rusty Quill characters if we were to do another thing. And that would feel, like, it would be really interesting to do that. Maybe we should, if we play another Goblin Quest game. But it would feel, because you put so much effort into designing each character, like, if you just move them over, that would feel like murder. Like, it would feel horrendous. It would be really difficult to say, and then I jump off the roof into the mouth of the Wolfman while singing a ballad, in order to get three extra points for my team to do the next thing.
Yeah. Because, which is a common experience in Goblin
Quest. Yeah, which happens in Goblin Quest all the time. But if that was Zolf, it would be... I mean, Zolf is probably the one that would do that.
Yeah, but Bertie his brothers, Dolph, Bolf, Kulf, and Goblin.
Yeah. Yeah, and like if Hamid did that, it would be heartbreaking. You know, and if Sasha did that, you'd assume that she'd walk out from the middle of the Wolfman because she'd slashed it from the inside.
I think that the thing is, it's more about the tone of the game.
Yeah. Yes.
So the reason I say Corporation is because Corporation is another game about being heroes. I don't actually care about the magic system because the magic system is quite easy. Do a check, is success, do thing. That's the building blocks of magic. It doesn't matter if it's a fireball or a big gun. A fireball is a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
That's all you have to worry about. But it's those two are games about being big damn heroes. I wouldn't want to run this game in Call of Cthulhu or Trail of Cthulhu or Dark Heresy, because their games
are failing and going mad.
Exactly. Those games are about failing or about things being hard. Dark Heresy is a game about stacking bonuses because you're thinking tactically and carefully. So, you know, in Dark Heresy, you could do a cyberpunk, you could do Warhammer 40k, which is what it's built for, you could do fantasy. But you have to do fantasy where you're going to think tactically and stack bonuses, not where we're doing it in a slightly loose kind of, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
D&D and Pathfinder support that kind of stuff, as does Corporation. So, yeah, I think you can make anything work, you just need to make sure that it's tonally consistent. Yeah.
With that in mind then, for the people who are most familiar, which systems would you say this would work with most, apart from Pathfinder?
I really want to play it in D&D 5th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Either that or 13th Age for the same reason. It's Pathfinder but cleaned up, because Pathfinder is D&D 3.5, which is a cool system, but it's very rulesy.
Yeah, fair. Well,
not qualified to
ask. No, I have no answers either.
Although I'd be quite interested in playing it in Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
You encourage a rile Bertie, flee now. Don't touch it, just leave.
I mean, I would say for a slightly more interesting, World of Darkness would actually be quite interesting. I'd like to give it a go in that.
Because then it's easier to do, because that's the one with the vampires, right?
Yep.
And werewolves.
Now there's a thought.
So I wouldn't do it in World of Darkness, but there are, I mean, White Wolf have released, say, Exalted. Or Scion.
No, God, I play an Exalted game. I said I wanted something less rulesy. Less rulesy.
I love Exalted, but it's more rulesy.
I think I'm going to run where people create entire tax systems and rules.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to wrap this up here before this breaks out into an actual fight.
Oh, no, this could just be a discussion for about 2-3 hours.
If you want to have it with us, get in touch on our forums.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or Twitter.
Yeah.
Nice or our Facebook, which is there.
Probably nowhere near James, because he's probably very bored by now.
Everyone's having a lovely time.
Yeah, I think.
And we hope you are too.
Bye. So,
bye.
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by RustyQuill.com and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial International License. Today's episode was recorded and produced by Alexander J. Newell. To comment on episodes, make donations, and view links, images, videos, and show notes, visit RustyQuill.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Tweet us on Twitter at TheRustyQuill or email us at mail@RustyQuill.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
So, following on, we have a question from Ian H. Or Ian... Ian? I don't know how to say that.
Yes, Alex, it's definitely... That's definitely how it's pronounced. Nailed it, 10 out of 10.
I'm bad at names.
What are these name things?
So, Aelx Newell, how are you doing?
So, this question's from... Yeah. Hippogriff can be handled using handle animal.
Is it because it's a mount? Right. It's because it's canonically used as a mount.
Correct.
But you can negotiate the hippo bit, but not the griffin bit. I've got the cooperation of half of it.
As we well know, hippogriffs are mundane animals, not magical. You can definitely find them frolicking in the pastures of Surrey.
It's okay.
Surely Pegasi and unicorns can also be mounts.
Okay, you want a new series goal. Bertie's going to find a unicorn.
Like, if you want to an arbitrary task, go for it.
Pegasus.
Pegasi and hippogriffs are kind of common.
Are you sure it's not Pegasodes?
Pegasodides.
Pegasum.
I prefer my adventures Pegasodic.
Yeah. Oh, goodness sake.
Pegasuma cum laude. That's really funny.
Pegasilly. Pegasilly.
I am Pegasicanus. Can we move on?
Yeah. I'm Pegasad.
Pegaso. Oh,
no. I'd also take all of Zolf's clothes and put them somewhere safe so that I could pick them up as Ben, because they will make fantastic and probably very expensive LARP costumes.
Well, that'd be a terrible fit.
Yeah.
But
dress up a child.
Dwarves are about 4 foot wide.
Ah. Fat child.
a really
fat child.
Beefy child.
A child.
A miniature quarterback, basically.
Yeah.
Not a quarterback. Probably offensive guard.
You can't come in. Sod off. No shoes.
Are we ready for our
fight? Yes. More than ready.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are...
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.